The next case of the day is number 06-3286, the United States against Lamont D. Williams. Mr. Corning.
Back again.
It's been a long 2 days.
It has.
I thought you were being a heart buff.
I was here yesterday and talked last today, so that's the way it goes sometimes. May it please the court, counsel. Reed Corning appearing for Lamont Williams in this appeal. In Booker, the Supreme Court found the guidelines unconstitutional. It excised 18 U.S.C. 3553A from its statutory authority and made the guidelines advisory. This circuit has chosen to give the guidelines substantial weight. Any sentence within the guidelines is considered reasonable. Now, confusing this is what I believe there exists an intra-circuit split concerning the rebuttable presumption of reasonableness, and that's Miller and Cunningham are at odds. Cunningham holds that there is a rebuttable presumption of reasonableness. Miller, on the other hand, that was decided after Cunningham, holds that any sentence under the guidelines cannot be treated as unreasonable. That, in my opinion, in effect, makes the guidelines mandatory. This all plays out in cases concerning the 100-to-1 ratio of crack cocaine to powder cocaine. Because if there's any sentence seen that is unreasonable, it's the 100-to-1 ratio. And as noted in Cunningham, if a judge, without abusing his or her discretion, could have ruled in the defendant's favor, the judge is entitled to insist, the defendant is entitled to insist the judge exercise discretion.
Mr. Cornea, could I just cut to the chase here? I know that you know that the issue of the 100-to-1 ratio of sentences for crack versus powder cocaine really isn't open to debate in this circuit, having been rejected numerous times, both before and after Booker. So I take it that the appeal is here in order to preserve the issue for Supreme Court review.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yeah. We feel, Mr. Lamont and myself and my firm feel very strongly about this issue, and we will be seeking appeal, and we actually have a case that has been accepted, well, not accepted, but it's been presented for certiorari review. But in this case, let me just go to the heart of what our concerns are and just make a record of it here. A court has to, under 3553, craft a sentence that is sufficient but not greater than necessary. And that isn't happening with the 100-to-1 ratio. The 100-to-1 ratio is inherently unreasonable. And because of this, should be set aside. In fact, at the sentencing hearing of Mr. Williams, and he was sentenced for a little over three grams of crack cocaine. We're talking, you know, a street value of $100 to $150 worth of crack cocaine. Now, there was a gun involved, 924C, 5 years in addition to that as well. But we're really focused on the crack cocaine here. Very, very little amount. Had he been sentenced with powder cocaine, his sentence would have been 42 to 51 months shorter than it was for the crack cocaine. That is significant. The authors of the guidelines indicate that this ratio is unreasonable. And I note Miller indicates that district courts must continue to carry out the choices of the legislature even if there exist powerful reasons for change. And I submit that that statement ignores over 200 years of judicial review, starting with Marbury versus Madison. decisions of Congress once deemed reasonable and as such constitutional have now been deemed unreasonable and unconstitutional. The history of our judicial system is replete with that. I've cited Plessy versus Ferguson, followed up where it was found reasonable, segregation was found reasonable. Then we go to the Board of Brown, the Board of Education, where that was overturned. You look at the data that's involved in these cases, and you compare that, and looking at that, you look at the equal protection issues that are involved, and there is an insidious racial impact of the 100-to-1 ratio. Look, 81.4% of all defendants sentenced under the 100-to-1 ratio for crack cocaine are African-American. Yet, African-Americans comprise about a third of those who actually use crack cocaine. And let's go over, since the guidelines were implemented, what's happened. Okay? Black dealers are 20% more likely to serve a prison sentence than white dealers. African-American offenders receive much longer sentences, an average of 105 months, as opposed to 62 months for white dealers. Between 1994 and 2002, the average time served by an African-American for a drug offense increased by 73%. That's an immense increase. And no rational basis or substantial interest of the state can justify that kind of increase and that kind of disparate treatment of African Americans. Now, during the same period of 94 through 2002, white dealers saw only an increase of 28% in their sentences. Again, astonishingly different. In 94, black dealers served an average of 33.1 months. In 2002, black dealers served an average of 57.2 months. There's the increase. And as I mentioned earlier in another case, that is comparable to the time given to violent white offenders. So we're placing nonviolent African-American offenders selling crack cocaine in prison, in BOP, for as long as we're placing violent white offenders. And also in terms of low-level cocaine offenders, we've seen a dramatic increase in those convictions and arrests, 48.4% to 66.5% from 95 to 2000. So the federal government is focusing more on the low-level crack cocaine dealers, something that we know the guidelines and the federal system weren't specifically designed to incorporate. I think that goes to the heart of this case. There's no rational basis for these kind of sentences. There's no substantial state interest being involved. What we see here is a case where African-American men, generally, are spending extraordinary long lengths of time in prison for selling a drug that is no different whatsoever than powder cocaine. It's absolutely the same drug. I'll save my time for rebuttal. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Carney. We'll hear now from Ms. Dutchman.
Good morning again. May it please the Court. Again, I represent the United States in this case. Contrary to the defendant's arguments, measured against any factors in 3553A you want, this sentence is absolutely reasonable. I want to first dispel the notion right away that he got 10 years for 3 grams of crack. The defendant pled guilty to possession with intent to distribute crack cocaine, and he pled guilty to a 924C count using a firearm in connection with a drug offense. The bulk of his sentence is not based on the amount of crack. It's based on the fact that he has a horrible criminal history. He's a criminal history category 5, and the 60-month mandatory consecutive enhancement of 924C. So this notion that the defendant is somehow unfairly swept up in these draconian crack guidelines is a little bit of an exaggeration in this case. This is the defendant's fourth felony drug conviction. When he was first approached by police in this case, he fled into a nail salon, causing a ruckus between him and the police in the middle of a mini mall. When he was apprehended, he had a loaded .22 caliber pistol in the same pocket as the crack he was selling. He has two juvenile adjudications for aggravated discharge of a firearm. Now, those aren't counted against him in the criminal history category because he was a juvenile. So if they applied, his criminal history category would even be higher. He's 27 years old. He has no verifiable work history whatsoever. By his own admission to the PSR writer, in the 11th grade, although he was having no problems doing the work, he dropped out of high school because he didn't feel like taking orders anymore. And since then, he's dealt drugs and lived off others to support himself.
Ms. Tushman, my understanding of the facts is that he was apprehended while fleeing an attempted armed robbery. Is that right?
I don't want to go so far as to say that because the attempted armed robbery proved to be a little odd because we're not still to this day quite sure if really it was that she might have owed him money for a drug transaction and he came to collect and then she got scared and called the cops. What we do know is that when they went to investigate the armed robbery, she was obviously the complainant, the victim, and he matched the description and he fled.
Were criminal charges brought for his confrontation?
They were originally, but they were dismissed pursuant to the federal indictment.
They were both brought in state court?
Yes. Yes, armed robbery and felon in possession of a firearm. And then they were dismissed when the United States indicted him. I also just want to talk just very briefly about the 100-to-1 ratio, because the defendant raises sort of a different argument than he focuses on today in the brief, and I don't want to not respond to that. And then he says that that's a valid argument, and the court just sort of ignored it. And he's partly right. To the extent that he was asking the court just abandon the crack cocaine to powder cocaine ratio and just come up with a new one or just disregard it altogether, he's right. The court didn't really go into any sort of rationale why she was refusing to do that, but I don't think she has to because, frankly, he's in this circuit asking her to commit reversible error. I think she was right to ignore it. But under United States versus Joynter, the court can consider the harshness of the ratio along with all the other factors in 3553 if it wants to in the context of the circumstances of a particular defendant. And defendant's attorney made the same arguments just as articulately before you as he did before Judge Crabb. Made all those same arguments. It's only 3 grams, he's a street level dealer, he had a poor upbringing, those sorts of arguments, he would have gotten nothing in state court, that sort of thing. And the court heard him and she considered him. And ultimately disagreed that in the particular circumstances that this sentence was too harsh. So the court did just what it was supposed to do with this particular type of argument. It disregarded the invitation to wholesale regard the ratio, but it did consider the ratio with respect to the particular circumstances of the defendant, analyzed it appropriately, and made her determination. We would ask that you affirm the defendant's sentence.
Thank you, Ms. Tuchman. How much time does Mr. Cornea have? He has 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. In regards to the state case, those charges were dropped relatively quickly once they began to interview the witness and realized what was going on. He was sentenced to 6 to 3 months for the crack cocaine charge, 60 months for the 924C violation. So it's a significant portion of his sentence. I just want to note that the DOJ, in its own reports, and this is outlined in my briefs as well, have found that these harsh sentences placed on low-level drug dealers have absolutely no impact whatsoever. No impact on deterrence. And all we're seeing happening is communities further destroyed. And that's not to say that crack cocaine isn't an issue, but there are better ways of dealing with it, and we're asking the court to overturn the 100-to-1 ratio and allow the district courts to sentence defendants under 3553A and overturn Miller. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cornea. Mr. Cornea, you took this case to by appointment of the court and have our deep thanks for your efforts on behalf of your client.
I appreciate the court's patience with me over the last couple of days.
Yeah, thank you. The court, and we thank counsel on both sides, and the case will be taken under advisement. We have finished the call of the day, and therefore the court will rise until the next scheduled oral argument.
Well, not related to the case, I just had a question I wanted to ask, if that's okay.
Shh.
I'm new to this. When you stated to the fact that...
If you could stand at rostrum, please.
Too used to just the district courts and circuit courts or state circuit courts. For future reference, when you ask us about if we're intending to appeal a case to the Supreme Court, is that a hint to me that I should be very, very short and sweet, or do you want, or go ahead and,
do my song and dance? No, I just, basically wanted
to. Yeah, she wanted to cut to the chase.
Just to make
sure you knew that you were.
Right.
Okay. You know, not.
And I tried to do that, but I was wondering if you wanted me just to say, yes, I'll rest in my briefs
and have
lunch.
No, you did just great.
Okay. All right.
You did
that's all I wanted to know.
We never would have guessed you were new at it. You both did just great. Thank you.